I just want to give a preface for this sermon and the next three. They're all tied together because seeds for these four sermons were drawn from the book that we're using for our Lenten series. And I know a number of you are actually actively participating in that. You've got copies of the book and you're reading the book, and you're going to be participating in one of the small groups. And I know some of you are going to be reading the book and you're not participating in a small group, and that's great. And some of you won't be doing either of those things, and that's also fine, because as we start chatting here in the sanctuary and what will happen between weeks, and I know there's a certain number of you that I have interaction with during the week as you respond to the sermon in different ways. Some of you are like, didn't like that one. And others are like, oh, more of that. I loved watching Dale squirm. You know, whatever it was, you know, I love those interactions. So don't stop with that. The book is Who Is This Man? It's John Ortberg. And he's quite a prolific writer and speaker. And the book is good material. Now, you need to know that when we talk about Jesus, and that's what John is doing in the book, we don't always need to talk about theology. You know, everything that's said about Jesus, everything we know about Jesus, isn't theological in nature. And it doesn't always have to be about his miracles, because there's this part of Jesus that I think we overlook or we forget to make a fuss about, and that's Jesus was a man. He was a human being, just like you and me. And there's some things about him that we need to catch at that level, because one of the things he did while he was here on the planet is he showed us how to be human, the way God intended us to be human. And so as you're reading the book, as you're discussing the book, or as you're listening to me talk about, and you're going to find this morning how small of a detail in the first couple of chapters caught my eye, because it was just about Jesus being a man. And I wanted to point at that for you. And so, a disclaimer, a front-end word here. I'm not offering these sermons to make you feel guilty that you have to read the book. You good with that? You know, if you've chosen not to read the book, that's okay. But I want you to know that if you are reading the book, I want you to think a little deeper, a little wider, or maybe even a little shallower than you might be. Because this morning, as we begin, I want to focus on two sentences from chapter 2. That's two-thirds of a very short paragraph. And as I was reading through, they just stopped me dead in my tracks. Because I knew it. It was not anything I'd not run across before, but it was just the way Ortberg said it that made me stop. And let me read those two sentences for you. They're on page 22 up toward the top, and I think it was on the right-hand side. Jesus would be called friend of sinners. It was not a compliment. And then the third sentence that completed the paragraph, he would be arrested as an enemy of the Romans. Now, you can go to Matthew chapter 11. I'm not going to go there this morning. But down around verse 16, 17, 18, 19, somewhere in that area, Jesus actually acknowledges that he was aware that that's what he was referred to. And I hope this morning as we go through the message, as we think it through, and then later as we discuss it over the week, that would make sense. But as I read those two lines, Jesus would be called friend of sinner. It was not a compliment. I wondered, what part of being a friend could ever be a bad thing? How might my or our lives be changed, altered, improved if our goal in life was to be a friend to someone else? But friend of sinners, that's how I want to look at Jesus this morning. I want to look at Jesus through the lens of that phrase, friend of sinners. Now, I need to invite you to journey with me how I process that. And so, first thoughts had to do with not everyone around Jesus would have fit the derogatory sinner. Sinner would have been reserved for anyone who didn't fit in that accuser's category of taste for friends. He smokes, can't be a friend. She cusses, okay. He cusses, it just, he can't be a, I've heard women cuss. He's a Cowboys fan, how can I be friends with him? You know, I mean, there are so many categories that exclude people from being our friend. They don't like potato chips. I don't understand that. But that was what was going on when people were using this word, friend. They were identifying a group of people around me that were acceptable, but here, as they were tossing it out toward Jesus, they were unacceptable. Now, the second thing that kind of rolled through my mind was whether or not that person who was accusing Jesus of being friend of sinners, whether they're aware of it or not, they were a sinner. Because we are all sinners. Let's say that together. We are all sinners. Shame on you. But we have to own that. And you know, as you stop and think about it, we're sinners in process. And there's a whole bunch of ways we're in process. You see, some of us are still lost in our sin. We don't know where we're going in life. Some of us are entertained by sin. Some of us are being or have been or will be rescued from sin. Some are just oblivious to sin. What do you mean that's wrong? And some of us have been crushed by sin. Now, there was a third thing that happened in my head as I was processing this, because I was trying to justify the statement, trying to protect my friend Jesus from these other things. But the third thing was the reality that there's this mile-wide chasm between being around sinners and sinning, being around sinners and condoning sin, being around sinners and somehow justifying that sinner's lifestyle. Big, big gap there. But we read in the scriptures, and we can't deny this, it's there. It's in black and white, or red if you have one of those Bibles. But we read that Jesus was around people who sinned, and he did that often enough, long enough, that he had been labeled friend of sinners. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to briefly show you a number of passages, a number of scenes, actually, that Jesus was part of that earned him this label, friend of sinners. And I'm going to kind of run down through these passages. I'm going to make a few comments. And here's one of those places where you can talk to me and say, that's not what I read there. And I'll explain to you why you're wrong. And, maybe you can explain to me why I'm wrong. And we'll go on and we'll have a wonderful week. But for right now, I've got the microphone. Hello, hello. And you have to listen. So let's visit some of these passages, and I'll show you how he earned this label. And then I'm going to show you why it was a good label, and then how we can earn that label, which I think would make us amazing. Amazing people. So first, John chapter 2, verses 1 to 11 is the wedding of Cana. We've already been there as one of the miracles. But let me just read two verses out of there, the first two. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. How many people like going to weddings? How many people like going to funerals? Yeah, okay. How many people like going to weddings? There is nothing wrong with going to a wedding. There's nothing sinful about that. There really isn't. But the super spiritual can find a problem with any place, any person, if they choose to do that. You know what they do at weddings? They drink sometimes. You know what else they do at weddings? They dance sometimes. And you know what these people did at weddings? Yeah, I don't know either, because I'm not that old. But Jesus was there. He was with people. And not only was he there, he got involved. He expended God's power to make wine so that this family wouldn't be embarrassed and so the party would continue. John chapter 4, verses 5 to 26, the woman at the well. I'm going to read from verse 5 just for a little bit. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, which is near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. Now, it was about noon, high noon, sun, hot, desert. Verse 7, when a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" Now, on this particular occasion, Jesus violated, he did wrong, he violated social taboos. First, he traveled to Samaria. That's where all the Samaritans lived, and Jews didn't like them. They were half-breeds. And he should have gone over and up along the coast, or he should have crossed over Jordan, gone up through that other side, and then come back in. But he chose to go through Samaria. And while he was there, he spoke to a Samaritan, and he spoke with a woman, Samaritan woman, since that's what it's called, and he spoke with that kind of woman. I mean, cut the guy some slack. He was thirsty. Now, I suppose we can overlook him wanting to save a few steps to get to his destination, so he did the straight line instead of the roundabout. We can cut him some slack, but mingling with impure Jews? Not so good. And mingling with a woman alone out in the desert? That wasn't good at all. Now, what I see here, though, is that Jesus somehow found the ability, maybe it was a necessity, to engage anyone or everyone that he ran into. In this case, it was for her soul's sake. And in the grand scope of things, it became an evangelistic crusade for the town. Matthew chapter 8, verse 2. This is the cleansing of the leper. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." And Jesus reached out his hand. He reached out his hand and he touched the man. "I am willing," he said, "be clean." And immediately he was cleansed of his leprosy. That didn't happen, but it did. Now, I suppose you could play games with this and say, well, this really wasn't a friend thing. It just was a connection as Jesus was passing by. But I have to tell you, there was some chumminess there where Jesus would reach out and touch an untouchable. Change his life. I'll bet Jesus' accusers had a heyday with that. Do you see what he did? He touched an untouchable. You can't be clean, pure. You can't be right when you do something like that. Friend of sinners. Luke chapter 5, verses 29 to 32, Matthew's party for Jesus. Beginning at the beginning of that chapter, then Levi held a great banquet then. The then is right after Jesus had called Levi or Matthew from his tax booth. He's a tax collector. He pulled them from his job and said, "Come follow me." And Matthew quit his job and went to follow Jesus. Then Matthew held this great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors, you know, who's Matthew going to invite to a party at his house? His friends, right? He was a tax collector. A crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with them, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law who belonged to their sect complained to his disciples, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" Now, I understand it's pretty easy when you read this kind of passage to recognize why his critics were upset with him. They were concerned. "Jesus, you're confused. You can't possibly know what this says to the people around you. You're hanging out with tax collectors." And I know that's probably in some of your minds. We're fast approaching April, where we're all going to have to talk to somebody about our taxes. But you hung out with, you partied down with tax collectors and sinners. And the religious leaders, they couldn't process this. And they clearly stated that Jesus was keeping bad company. Tax collectors. Now, back then, they were not the most honest. You do know how they made their living, right? It's anything that they could collect above what they had to pay the government was their salary. We'll hear about another one in a minute who did quite well. But sinners. Now, I'm just wondering, what do we say about the boldness of this group of sinners? Because we're all sinners, right?
We have this group of sinners identifying this other group of people as sinners. There's some irony there. Now, I do have to say this about Jesus. If he does something and he doesn't quite get what he wants out of it, he does it again. So in Luke chapter 19, verses 1 to 10, the passage that Cindy read. Cindy, thank you for reading this morning. That was so beautiful. And thank you for allowing the scriptures to break you in front of us. That's precious, precious. But in this passage, we have another tax collector. Listen to this. So Zacchaeus, a tax collector, ran ahead, that's Jesus and his entourage, he ran ahead, climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him since Jesus was coming that way. And when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and he said to him, Zacchaeus, get down here. I must stay at your house today. And so he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Now, you know, it's not enough to hang out with tax collectors, but Jesus invited himself over for dinner. Now, I don't know whether he heard that Zacchaeus' wife really made a good pork roast or what was going on there. Okay, maybe it wasn't a pork roast, a roast chicken or something. But he just knew he was going to go hang out with Zacchaeus today. Not just friend of sinner, he initiated a relationship with a man who only wanted to see him. Matthew 26, 6 to 13. This is the account of Simon the leper and the woman. The woman. I'm going to read this whole section. This is so priceless. While Jesus was, beginning at verse 6 in Matthew 26. While Jesus was in Bethany in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. And when the disciples saw this, they were indignant. Why this waste? They asked. This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. Now, aware of this, maybe not even actually hearing it, but aware of this, Jesus said to them, why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. And when she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Wouldn't it be amazing if you were the person that Jesus was impressed with enough to write your story into his story? That's what happened here. But you know, there's a storyline that's going on. I call it the upper story. It's where God's going. And he doesn't flinch. You know, his story is not like yours and mine. His is steady. And he invites us to take our storyline and to come up and run parallel with hers. She did that. And look at that. She's in the Bible. Now, it doesn't make us a hero, but it makes us more like Jesus. In this passage, we see multiple violations. I mean, first, Jesus went to the home of a guy called the leper. That'd be like us going all over somebody's house who's known as the COVID. Yeah, you get that. We just wouldn't do that. But here's Jesus at the house of a guy known as the leper. Now, that wasn't a good thing. But while he was there, he allowed this woman to touch him, to care for him in an inappropriate way, his complainers were pointing out. But again, Jesus apparently saw no barrier, no issue with her crossing this line. Now, there's a thing here that's going on that I don't know if we truly appreciate. And there's a thing we call being a friend with somebody. But there's thing in his culture, Jesus' culture, that we need to master, and that's being at table with. Being at table with. That's what Jesus was doing here. He was not just with the leper. He was at table with, which most of us would be really grossed out by this, but they were eating out of a dish together with their fingers. And maybe little pieces of flatbread where they scoop the stuff out. You ever eat at a Middle Eastern restaurant? Oh, you should. Wash your hands before you go. Actually, they'll wash them for you. But there's something intimate about being at table where you eat out of a common dish. Now, those of you who are in love, you've probably shared an ice cream with your sweetie at one point. Yeah, it's nothing like that at all, because there you're not even sharing a spoon. Here, your hands, intimacy around the food. This was Jesus messing with people in a good way, unless you were one of his accusers. Those are some of the more significant passages I wanted to highlight for you. Can you see what's going on here? Jesus, friend of sinners. There's other things he did as he was going through the Gospels. As we read through the Gospels, he hung out with other questionable people. He hung out and did favors for Roman government officials. He hung out with and received care from a significant of the women in the area. He hung out, he touched, he healed, he blessed the blind, the diseased, the crippled. He hung out with social outcasts. He paid attention to the little children. And don't we put them downstairs so they don't bother us here? He hung out with non-Jewish people. Jesus modeled a ministry of people connection that crossed every social, every racial, every economic barrier. There were just people to Jesus. And at the end of the day, Jesus is guilty. He is guilty of being friend of sinners. And apparently he was okay with that because he talked about it. And I can almost hear him chuckling in Matthew 11 as he talked about being called friend of sinners. And I wonder how we would do if we would be accused like Jesus of being friend of sinners. I know a little bit about that. You know, along our journey together, Carol and I have made the mistake of hanging out with the wrong people and lost friends over it. Sad, isn't it, Carol? Jesus was in that boat. But what does it mean to be friend of sinners? Why might that be a good thing, and what might that look like in our lives? Again, as I was thinking about those two sentences, as I was thinking about Jesus being described that way, again, my I need to defend Jesus came in, and let me explain that a little bit, and then you can laugh at me because this is kind of embarrassing, but I need to share it with you. Now, the first thing I did is I played with the idea of friend. It's a vague idea, as a concept. We can all define that differently, stretch it a little bit and embrace a whole bunch of things. I mean, really, was he a friend? He was just among people. Was he a friend? He was just with people. Was he a friend? He just enjoyed people. Was he a friend? He just kind of engaged people in conversation. Was he a friend? I mean, he just loved them to death. And I had to give that up because when I got to that point, I realized, yeah, he was a friend. And my guess is that Jesus' accusers chose the word friend because it would stir something up in people's hearts and they would have a reaction. And if you were Jewish, and the reaction that you might have would be, how could he do that? And perhaps those accusers were hoping that they could undermine his credibility as a good person, let alone as a good Jew or as a reputable teacher. But you know what? With clarity came understanding, and they failed because love won. Love won. And that's what Jesus was doing. He was loving, and love won. My second thought was, well, what about Jesus' agenda on earth? Maybe we could defend him being friend of sinners because he had an agenda. And you know what his agenda is, but let me just kind of rehearse it with you. He came to seek and to save the lost, yes? Yes. He came to carry our sins far away, yes? He came to introduce a different kind of love, yes? He came to model what this love might look like, yes? He came to launch a community that would ultimately be called church, yes? Okay. He came to launch you and me individually as his representatives, yes? He came to bring into fruition a kingdom that his father had spoken of, yes? And he sends you and me, having embraced all of these things. Yes? Yeah. Which leads me to how I want to land this sermon this morning. By looking at Jesus in action, noting his ministry model, with hopes of identifying a few themes that might be effective for our lives. These are not gimmicks, friends. I'm not big on gimmicks. These are life-changing themes that if we weave them into our lives, we become more like Jesus. And so let me just highlight a few people behaviors. Let's call them people behaviors. That's a real technical term. First one, Jesus spoke with people. He didn't speak at them. He didn't speak down to them. He spoke with people. He saw them as people. And though he is Almighty God, he spoke with people. You know what? You and I can do that too. Let's say it together. There are just people. There are just people. I'm one of them. I'm one of them. Yeah, we can just talk with people like Jesus did. Secondly, Jesus listened to people. Do you know what most people are doing when they're supposed to be listening to somebody? They're thinking about what profound thing they're going to say next. And often, it has nothing to do with what the other person just said. Jesus fully listened, ears and eyes, so he could speak to the real issue at hand. I have to confess, I have spent thousands of dollars learning how to do that as a coach. I'm certified as a coach. Did you know that? I could hang out a shingle and go into business. Life coach, ministry coach, executive coach. I can do that. I was stupid for the longest time. And I had to pay money to learn how to listen with my eyes. Jesus just did that. We just need to be other focused. You don't need to spend thousands of dollars doing that. Don't be like me. Just think of all the ice cream and potato chips I could have eaten. Spend it all on classes. Thirdly, Jesus affirmed that he had heard, and he did this through conversation. That is this back and forth sharing with the other person that enabled them to know that he was with them in the conversation, because what he said meshed with what they said, and with what he said, they said, well, you know what that is. And if you think about a conversation as a dance, Ginger Roger and Fred Astaire's, for those of you old enough to know that, he let them lead the conversation until it made sense for him to tie a knot and land it. It's a skill you and I can learn, master even. Fourthly, Jesus enjoyed people. He laughed with, I bet you he laughed at them sometimes, because that's what we do when we're with people we enjoy. I assumed he joked with them. He shared table with them, as I said, eating food with them. He even fed them on occasion. Think the 5,000, the 4,000, the disciples, even the last time they ate together. He fed them on the beach with fish that, I don't know where he got the fish. The market? Crawled up out of the water because he called? I don't know. Fed his disciples. How many people can you list on your fingers that you just enjoy being with no agenda? Better yet, who are the 6 or 8 people who will be there to carry your box out of the sanctuary before they stick you in the ground? These are the kind of relationships Jesus was enjoying. Jesus also walked life with other people. He wasn't always about correcting them, fixing them, healing them. He walked life with them. And sure, he did cure, he did heal, he did forgive. But many of them, most of them, he was just with them. And finally, Jesus protected people, especially the weak. Think of the woman caught in adultery, the abuse she took. Where was the guy? I mean, she was caught in adultery. You don't do that alone. What about the little children that even his disciples wanted to chase away? He says, no, no, no. You need to be around them because you need to become like them. Or the blind, the downtrodden, the disenfranchised, the people no one saw anymore. My friends, as Christ followers, we get to represent Him to others. It is both a high calling and an amazing privilege. And so let me offer to you a couple of ideas before I send you to a congregational meeting. Think about the idea of Trinity Church set loose or set out or launched into the communities around Boyertown to do very specific things. Talk with people, affirm people, enjoy people, do life together with people, defend people who are being stepped on. I'm trying to think how any of that could be a bad thing. John Ortberg wrote, "Jesus would be called friend of sinners. It was not a compliment. But a friend of sinners looked good on Jesus. I want to wear that mantle as well as I take on my daily life." What about you? What about you? There is this fun little book, and I don't want to mess with the book we're reading right now, but there's this fun little book that has a really big challenge. Aaron Chambers wrote this book, Eats with Sinners. Matt, there are actually recipes in this book. But in it, he talks about hanging out with all different kinds of people and how to use food like Jesus did to build relationships. And there is this proverb, and I ran across it, enough years ago that I don't even want to put a date on it. But I ran across this proverb. I think it's an Arabic proverb. I haven't been able to find it since I first read it. But it reads something like this: "You cannot be enemies with the one with whom you just ate." Profound? It's life-changing. And so, my friends, I want to challenge you this morning. I want you to think about shifting your thinking from "those people are sinners" to "we're all sinners doing life together." From "those people are sinners" to "we're all sinners doing life together." And then get busy earning the title, friend of sinners.